The problem with semiconductor lasers at the time was that they work fine in vacuum, transmitting over vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
But as an example, if there had been if that night had been foggy, if that night had rain, if that night had this or that, you couldn't. You were transmitting by light.
Right.
And they never really went very far until my friend Charlie Cow told people how to make fibers.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we're the engine and they're the transmission.
Yeah.
And that's a fantastically big field
mm-hmm.
now. I mean, if I only had invested, $100 into some of those startup companies in the communications area, I'd be rich now.
Yeah.
It turns out that this company that just entered the S&P 500 has had its initial price go up by
$48,000.
So $100 right now, if I just put $100 in it initially, they multiply 100 by 48,000, you're into the millions.
Yeah. All right. It's a nice...
But be that as it may, I didn't do that. But anyway, the answer was that we did show that, and the military liked that. They sponsor most of Lincoln Lab. And I had a lot of people coming and showing that and broadcasting television for them over a beam of light.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, that was a problem. We got a patent in 1966. The real mass use of semiconductor lasers was 1983
mm-hmm.
with the CD.
Mm-hmm.
And if you count years at 17, that means our patent had already expired.
Yeah.
We're going way ahead. So what happened then is we went ahead and we made lasers of various things. We made semiconductor lasers out of maybe 15 odd semiconductors.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ones we did was called a lead salt. And one of the nice features of the lead salt is that it operated in the absorption bands of various constituents of the molecules.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could end up detecting NO and CH4, all those sorts of things.